One of the great things about being a member of Emmanuel is you get to know people from all over the world who have remarkable stories. One of those individuals is a friend of mine. His wife was my secretary for a couple of years. They have since moved to D.C., and he is on his way overseas to North Africa. And he'll be working with the United States military. And I was visiting with my friend, whom I'll not name because this is being broadcast on the internet. And he is going to be right in the middle of Western civilization's fight against radical Islamic terrorism. And as he was sharing with me some of the training that he's been going through, and we visited a little bit about his family going over to be with him, and I told him that our prayers would be with him and with his wife and children, he shared with me that when they showed him in the military briefing that he was a part of a couple of weeks ago, the still photographs of the 21 Coptic Christians who were beheaded in Lebanon, that he was told to swallow hard, prepare himself, because they were going to show him the video and magnify it in order to try to identify the terrorist. And he said, I got nauseated watching the horrific video of these Christians losing their lives. But in the early service, another friend of mine, Colonel Doug Coffey, who is CNO at Integris, he is in the reserves for the United States Army, he shared with me, and I agree, he doesn't believe that Christians, followers of Jesus, who live in Middle America, the heartland, people like you and me, will face this kind of thing in our lifetimes. Now, our church members who are over there on the front lines will. In fact, we had our own church members who just got back from being in Niger, Africa. And John was telling me that 80 churches intentionally burned by ISIS. The water was turned off at these churches, the buildings in Niger. Police were paid off, and the churches lost everything in terms of their building, their possessions, and so on. And about 119 lost their lives. And we've got folks who go over and do mission work and drill for water and do medical. I told the crowd Wednesday night that when ISIS tried to destroy the clinic that we built, our church built, and Humedica has operated and will be taking over here in a couple of years, the women from Niamey surrounded the clinic and basically told the terrorists, you'll have to kill us to get to it. This clinic has saved our lives and saved the lives of our children. And so that clinic was saved because the native women of Niger protected it. So we've got folks who are there on the front lines, but not you. You're going to go to work this week. You're not going to face this kind of stuff. You're going to pray for people who are there. You're going to give and support missions over there. But you're not going to face this. But yet, I believe this week you will face an enemy that is just as deadly. We don't ever talk about it. We'll talk about ISIS. All you read about on Facebook is ISIS. But we don't talk about the enemy that Jesus talks about in Luke 6. You know where you'll face this enemy? When you read magazines. When you watch television. It's an enemy that will infiltrate your mind. It's an enemy that will seek to destroy your life. And you don't even know it. Well, Jesus is about to make us aware of this enemy. Yes, it is a spiritual enemy, but it is just as deadly. Remember in Luke chapter 6, Jesus has been telling his disciples, when people hate you, love them. When people treat you poorly, be kind to them. If somebody asks you for something, give. And don't expect anything in return. I mean, the things that he's been saying in this Sermon on the Plain, I'm sure his disciples were standing around listening to him and thinking, are you kidding me? Who lives like that? We've never read anything like this. We've never heard anybody speak like this. Who does this? And because Jesus is the God-man, Emmanuel, God among us, knowing their thoughts, he responds with four parables. And this is our text. Luke chapter 6, beginning in verse 39. Jesus spoke a parable to them, that is his disciples. A blind man cannot guide a blind man, can he? Will they not both fall into a pit? Then he gives them a second parable. A pupil is not above his teacher, but everyone after he has been fully trained will be like his teacher. Then he gives a third parable. And why do you look at the speck that is in your brother's eye, but you do not notice the log that is in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, brother, let me take out the speck that is in your eye, when you yourself do not see the log that is in your own eye? You hypocrite. First take the log out of your own eye, and then you will clearly see to take out the speck that is in your brother's eye. And then he gives a fourth parable. For there is no good tree which produces bad fruit, nor, on the other hand, a bad tree which produces good fruit. For each tree is known by the fruit that it gives. For men do not gather figs from thorns, nor do they pick grapes from a briar bush. The good man, out of the good treasure of his own heart, brings forth what is good. And the evil man, out of the evil treasure, brings forth what is evil. For his mouth speaks from that which fills his heart. Now look at this last sentence. For his mouth speaks from that which fills his heart. Whose mouth? The mouth of the teacher whose heart is evil. Whose mouth? The mouth of the teacher who is blind. Whose mouth? The mouth of the teacher that is saying things opposite of what I'm saying. So what Jesus is doing to his disciples who may be objecting to the words of Jesus by saying, we've never heard anybody else say this. He gives them four parables warning them to be sure to listen to the right kind of people. Now let's take a look at these four parables. When Keith Schwant, who was in the early service when it got all over with, he stopped me and he said, you know, Pastor, when I was a little boy, he said, I was always taken to church by a cranky old uncle. We were Methodist. And it was on a day just like this, snowy and icy, and the district superintendent was filling in for the pastor. And we usually got out at 10 till 12. And that district superintendent preached till 12, then 10 after, then 15 after, then 20 after. And he said, wait, he said, man, I'll never forget it. When it was finally over, I was walking out with my uncle. He's a big, tall rancher. And he stops that district superintendent and he said, listen to me. I'm a rancher. And when it's snowy and icy outside, and only half the herd shows up, I don't give them all the hay. Well, only half the herd has shown up this morning. So I'm not going to give you all the hay. We'll be out by about 10 till 12. But let's go. Parable number one. Listen to only that person who sees the truth of how one should live. Now, we had a lot of young people in the second service. And man, I tried to impress this upon them. It's not easy in this culture and generation. But listen to what Jesus says. It's the first parable. A blind man cannot guide a blind man, can he? Will they not both fall into a pit? Now, in the Old Testament, as well as the New Testament, blindness is a metaphor for a lack of truth. in overcoming the objection of the disciples who say, "We've never heard anything like this before," Jesus says, "Well, if a blind man is guiding you, aren't you both going to fall into a pit?" The psalmist said, "The wicked don't know, nor do they understand. They walk about in darkness." Paul says, "The God of this world has blinded their minds." Blindness of truth leads to a great and terrible fall. My wife and I will watch a couple of these reality shows where singers are trying to become the American Idol or the next voice and so on, and it is amazing. When you watch a young man on the platform singing, or a young lady, and they're singing a song, and then the camera will span to the audience and pan all over from right to left, everybody's singing the song. Everybody's mouthing the words, the judges, the young men, the young women, of the song that is being sung from the stage. And I look over at my wife and I say, "Honey, do you know this song?" "No. No." "But everybody else does." When we get our idea of how to live life from songs written by blind people, from magazine articles written by those who don't know the truth, from movies of those who say things totally opposite of what Jesus says, we're listening to the blind. And Jesus says, when the blind guide the blind, they both fall into a deep pit. By the way, if your translation translates this word pit as shallow pit, which I think some do, it maybe even the NIV, I'm not sure, that's a mistranslation. The word that Jesus used to describe what happens when the blind lead the blind is a word that was used in his day to describe wells of water that were dug, but abandoned because no water was found. Now, unlike today in Niger, when we drill for water, I mean, we're using machines and so on. Back in Jesus' day, it was by hand, and it was a lot of work, and they would dig deep. And if they didn't find water, they'd move on. You say, well, why didn't they fill the pit back up? Because they wanted everybody to know where the water table was. There's no water here. And so blindness, which was a very common disease in Jesus' day. His disciples would have known of it because, unlike today, ophthalmologists, optometrists, if you went blind in Jesus' day, basically you had to beg because there was no cure. These water pits, these deep pits all around, immediately Jesus tells a parable that parallels real life for his disciples. And that's where we get the word parable. It's from the same root word in English, parallel. A parable is a story that parallels real life. What Jesus is saying is this: you're struggling with what I'm telling you to do? Love your enemies? Turn the other cheek when they hit you? Be kind to those who despise you? You're struggling because you've never heard anybody else say this? When the blind lead you, you will both experience a great fall. And so I would say to those of you who are going through marriage problems or struggling in relational issues at work or whatever, here's the thing. Be very careful who you listen to, because it's Christ alone that gives you the truth. The second parable that he gives is this: follow only that person who has experienced the training of how one should live. This is the next parable. It's found in verse 40, where he says, "The pupil is not above his teacher. After he is fully trained, he," that is the pupil, "will be only like his teacher." Now, you may not have heard of this parable, but Jesus uses it four times during his earthly ministry. He says the exact same thing in Luke 6:40, the text that we just read, Matthew 10:24, John 13:16, and John 15:20. Basically, what he's saying is this: if all you're doing is listening to blind people, people who don't know the truth, and the Word of God is what is true, if all you're doing is listening to songs and reading magazines and books and watching movies made by blind people, you will never, ever experience a change of life, because you'll never surpass your teacher. When my two oldest boys were really young, I wanted them to learn Taekwondo. And so I decided that I would teach them. I went out and took a few classes myself in Taekwondo, and then they were just, I mean, really small, so I was going to teach them some Taekwondo moves. Now they're 26 and 25 years old, and I'm not going to rat them out. I'll just say this: they still don't know Taekwondo because they didn't have a very good teacher. You'll never go beyond the experience of the one who is teaching you. This is why Jesus says, "Follow me. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes unto the Father except by me." A suggestion for those of you who are in the habit of attending church, those of you who may be our guests, those of you who are checking a manual out, a suggestion for how to find a solid church. If you ever attend a church where the pastor puts himself up as the vicar of God, meaning his word is law, you should avoid that church. Because a good church is where the teacher says, "Jesus Christ alone is the one worthy to follow. I am fallible, I am weak, and I make mistakes. I want to help you in following Jesus, but follow him, not me." You ever find a church like that? That's a great church to be a part of. But many of us grew up in those churches where basically the law of the church became the law of the land. And rather than pointing us to the words of Christ, it became the doctrine of the church, whatever the church said. And when you would ask the question, "Hey, where is that found in Scripture? Where is Jesus saying this?" And some of the most vicious people in the world can be church people. You will never surpass your teacher. Third, Jesus says, pay attention only to that person who can be trusted to live as one should live. He gives a third parable. He says, why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but not notice the log in your own eye? Again, this is a parable that all of us are probably familiar with. You know, quit looking at the speck in my eye without noticing the log that is in your own eye, and so on. To whom is Jesus speaking? Well, again, his disciples. But I want to point something out. Very well could be that the Pharisees had begun to creep in, and this became a mixed company. I don't know. All I know is this. In the book of Matthew, the two previous parables that we just went over, the parable of the pupil and his teacher and the blind leading the blind, those were always told to the Pharisees. And so it could be that in this text, Jesus turns to the mixed company, to the Pharisees, and he says, why are you always looking to pull the speck out of other people's eyes and you don't even notice the log in your own? Or it possibly could be that there's some legalism in his own followers that he's rooting out. Because this is what legalism is. This is the root of it. We always have our finger pointed at other people, and we never have that same finger pointed at us. Again, I can talk about Southern Baptists because I am one. I'm not going to talk about anybody else. grew up a son of a Southern Baptist preacher, third generation Southern Baptist pastor. We Southern Baptists are horrible at this. We rail against the homosexuals. We rail against the addicts. We rail against those in prison. We always point our finger at other people. And we never, as preachers, talk about our own gluttony, our own pride, our own greed, our own sins. By the way, if you think that the word speck here means a little dust mite, something small, it's not what the word refers to. Literally, this is the word splinter. It's the idea of a long piece of wood that gets in somebody else's eye. Or maybe a blade of grass. Have you ever had that happen? I mean, oh, it hurts. It hurts. And so here, the parable is this. You've got teachers. You've got people who are trying to help you, either through what they write or what they say. And they're wanting to help you with that splinter, but they've got a log in their own eye. The word log here is translated properly in some of your translations as beam. Now, if you're in construction, you know what the beam of a home is. In fact, all you have to do is look around here in this building. We have what Jesus is referring to right here, this wooden beam that starts over here and goes all across the ceiling, above the cloud, and then over here. This is the beam. It's almost like Jesus is making a joke. He's saying, you keep pointing your finger at people and that big old beam in your own eye. You're not even paying attention to it. Again, this is one of the great things about programs like Celebrate Recovery or places where the grace of God is real. You'll have leaders who are not afraid to be honest about their own struggles, their own faults, who will tell you what it is that they're struggling with, and they resist pointing the finger at others. Those are people worth listening to. But finally, and this is the last little load of hay, in the fourth and final parable, Jesus says, hear only that person who has the treasure of divine life within. In the fourth and final parable, verse 43, he says, there is no good tree that produces bad fruit, nor does a bad tree produce good fruit. The fruit of a tree is an unfailing indicator of the health of that tree. What fruit is he talking about? Well, the first thing that comes to mind is the fruit of the Spirit. Love. If someone hates you, love them. Goodness. Listen, if someone is unkind to you, be good to them. Patience. If you lend to someone and they don't pay you back, it's all right. Don't expect anything in return. Joy. Peace. Self-control. This is one of the reasons why the movement of churches to broadcast their services in locations around the world, and that then becomes an isolated church that is a part of the mother church. It's happening all over the United States. It's one of the problems. Because if you ever attend a satellite church on a regular basis where the teacher, the preacher, doesn't live, he's 750 miles away, you don't watch to see if he pays his bills. You don't notice how he is in a restaurant. You don't observe him when he's with his wife. You can't tell what kind of fruit he bears. There's a pastor in the northwestern part of the United States who had a wonderful ministry. They estimate 15,000 to 20,000 people producing satellite church campuses across the United States. And he would beam his teaching, and he was an articulate speaker. I mean, he could preach the Word of God. But what people didn't know in those satellite locations is that the staff really struggled because of the vulgar language of the pastor and staff meetings, because of the anger that he would display, because of the things that he would do. People at satellite campuses didn't know that. Well, the pastor eventually fell. His ministry has been closed up after the collapse. You see, Jesus warns us of this. When there's rotten fruit in the life of the teacher, he's not worth listening to. This warms my heart. Because here you've got Jesus talking plain to his disciples. Just really plain. Down to earth. Love your enemies. Be good to those who despise you. Lend, don't expect anything in return. The disciples are like, are you kidding me? Who does that? We've never read that. We've never heard that. We've never lived that. We don't see anybody doing that. Are you kidding me, Jesus? Surely you're adjusting. If the blind lead the blind, don't you both fall into a pit? You'll never go past your teacher, will you? Look at me. Is this not the way you see me living? I'm telling you the truth. The very next verse, which we'll look at next Sunday, Jesus says, "Why do you call me Lord, and you don't even do what I say?" I had a gentleman stop me after the last service, the second service, and he said, "Wow, man, God spoke to me. I'm in the middle of some hurt right now." He said, "But God came to me today through his word, and he spoke to me and encouraged me. I know the direction that I'm to go because I've heard from Jesus Christ." That's probably the greatest compliment I could ever be given. Jesus has spoken. In the plain talk from the Sermon on the Plain that he gave to his disciples. Now the question is, will you and I hear him?